Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuhu, and good evening to our listeners. Welcome to the last half hour of You Classified this Tuesday, the 8th of June 2010. Over the last 1.5 hour, we've been speaking to Brother Dawood Moussa Pidcock. We've been talking mainly about Israel. Hopefully, we will be touching on the new piece of legislation that's been adopted by the European Union last night. Very, very shortly after that, I would have just a few more points to round off the conversation on Israel. Also, our guest Alex Harrison has joined us just before the break. A lady who's been on the flotilla last week that was invaded by the IDF. We will also be joining with her in a few seconds. Due to reason otherwise, we couldn't get Sir Gerald Kaufman today. Hopefully he will be joining us next week, and same with Alexander Barron. In the meantime, if you want to get your calls in and if you want to talk to Dawood or possibly with Alex Harrison, she's not got much long with us, she's got about another few more minutes. You can call 0121 772 8892. That's 0121 772 8892. We will be now joining Alex Harrison and Dawood Moussa Pidcock. Good evening to both of you.
Good evening.
Hello, Alex.
Oh, hello, good evening. Yes.
Good evening. Yes, so you were saying before the break the consignment or the cargo you were carrying with the flotilla, the cement and medical equipment. Now, there were some reports that on some of the ships they actually were carrying weapons. How true are those reports? I mean,
that's absolute nonsense. Again, like so many of the Israeli statements, and it's an out-and-out insult to the authorities of the countries where we sailed from. We obviously went through all the usual port inspections, which are very similar to getting on an aeroplane. I know the Turks were very thorough. A friend of mine who boarded the Turkish boat even had his Swiss Army knife removed from him. And on our boats, I know that we were all strictly non-violent. All our boats were searched very thoroughly by the authorities in the country we departed from, be it Greece, Cyprus, elsewhere in the Mediterranean. I think it's very clear that we were all peace activists. We're not a violent organisation. If we'd been looking for violence, the results on the boats would have been quite different. The 500 of us that have been soldiers seriously injured, there were no weapons. What the young men on the Marmara picked up to defend themselves with were things like broom handles, parts of the railing of the ship. And you have to remember that the ship is a piece of machinery, and it, you know, if you took a long car journey, you'd take a toolkit with you.
Of course.
Now, I heard from my friends on the Marmara, and I didn't see it myself, that after the passengers were rounded up and sat down in and detained, the soldiers then went into the galley, the ship's kitchen, and removed the knives to put them out on display. There's no evidence that these knives were used by the passengers or against the soldiers. If they had been, the Israelis would be showing us all pictures of soldiers with knife wounds. That hasn't happened. It's just shameless publicity and lying on their part.
Audacity and mendacity, which is what they're brilliant at.
How did you feel at the time when you were there? What was the feeling on the boat as well?
Well, we saw the beginnings of the attack on the Marmara, and it's the smallest ship in the flotilla. We've been sailing very close to them, actually, for our protection. When they first came at the Marmara, when the warships that had been on the horizon launched the Zodiac speedboat towards us, we thought that those boats were too small to be coming for the Marmara, and we thought they were coming for us. And as we moved away from them, only two of the speedboats stayed with us. We saw the others coming down on the Marmara. And then as we moved away, we saw the helicopter coming down, and we heard the sound of live fire. But at that point, we had no idea that people had been killed or really shot. Now, I was on a boat last year that was taken by force by the Israelis. And although we were roughed up, manhandled, battered and bruised, they didn't use lethal force on us. And this year, I didn't really expect it to be any different. But the last message we received on the radio from the captain of the Marmara as we pulled away, we asked him if we should stay because we'd seen the helicopter coming down. We asked if we should stay and be of any assistance, try to be of some assistance. And at that point, I now know that the captain of the Marmara knew that, that at least two of his passengers were dead. He didn't tell us. He simply told us that they were being brutally attacked, but that we must carry on and try to get out the footage that we had. And the reason that we had to carry on to do that was because for several hours at that point, our telecoms had been knocked out by the Israelis. The GPS had been blocked. Our satellite phones and different networks had been blocked.
Yes.
And he wanted us to outrun the block so that we could get the evidence out. And at that point, we really didn't know what had taken place or what was unfolding on the Marmara. So I think at that point, I just felt a sense of disappointment and of apprehension of what was to come, because we knew they would eventually come for us. What I didn't know was the level of violence that we would face and how that would go on. And I think that's my outstanding feeling from the experience. Last year, once we were taken into custody, we were treated as normal prisoners. This year, we were put in a special compound, and at every step of the way, we were mocked and humiliated. We had all of our legal rights, and legal rights as Israel defines them, we had all of our legal rights, detainees,
yeah,
denied
just kind of,
us.
You preempted me there in a way.
Mocked and humiliated and treated just with utter contempt, and the hate that they had was relentless. And I think that was the most shocking thing for me. I don't know how many different stories to tell you. I think one that really upset me in prison was a woman, a passenger who had been with her husband when the Israelis had shot him through the head on the boat. She was just thrown into prison with the rest of us. And on the second day, she was brought a photo of him, by which point he'd been dead sort of for 36 hours. And his face was bloated and distorted. And she was just handed a photo like it was a takeaway menu to identify him. And they were... Their callousness and inhumanity absolutely shocked me. And this went on right till they were deporting us against our will. At the airport, they beat some of the women. We saw them very severely beat three of the men. I mean, one so severely that he couldn't get on the plane.
The Israeli soldiers actually beat up some of the women on the convoy.
Yes, I was with the last group of women to go through, the last 15 of us, when they held us in prison vehicles. What should have been a 40-minute journey, they kept us in the prison vehicles for 6 hours. Without food and water or access to the toilet, generally shouted and jeered at us, as they had done all the way along, you know, taking photos against our will, shouting, which is illegal, photograph prisoners, shouting and jeering, pushing us around. We all had bruises just from where we were continually manhandled and searched and bodily searched against our will. And at the airport, they penned us in, surrounded us by soldiers that whistled and jeered at us, and on two occasions soldiers just waded into the group of women and beat women indiscriminately for reason at all.
With all this, obviously,
and at that
must
point
have...
we were also watching the other side of the barrier as they jumped on and beat men, one of whom was beaten so severely he couldn't get on the aeroplane. But I think that the saddest thing I saw at the airport was the final passengers coming from the plane were the men who'd come from hospital, and they were injured. And many of them had been shot in the top of the foot. Now, this is from, I believe, from when the helicopters were descending over the Marmara.
Yes.
They began firing live fire out of the helicopters. And that's why these men were shot. Either, you know, the victim who died was shot in the top of the head. The other men were shot in the top of the feet because the fire was coming from above them. And I saw these men coming through the airport. We'd all had all our belongings removed from us, everything down to just clothes we stood up in, everything else, even the papers out of our pocket had been taken, our wallets and everything. These men were still, on Wednesday evening, were still in the clothes they'd been in from Sunday, covered in blood, torn and tattered. And they said many of them were hobbling with a bandaged feet where they'd been shot in the foot. The Israelis didn't give them a wheelchair, they didn't even give them crutches to walk on. And if anybody stepped forward to assist them as they walked across the airport, that person was shouted at, dragged away and beaten. These men who'd been shot were made to hobble unassisted across the airport.
Now, you must have obviously informed the government here, the British government, of everything that's taken place, everything that's transpired. So what have they said? What have they said to you? What do they intend to do about all this?
Well, I despair of the British government at this point. They have just simply failed to stand up to Israel at every step of the way. I know my contacts here in the UK were calling the British Foreign Office as we were under attack in the Mediterranean because we, you know, we still had some satellite feed and some radio contact at the beginning of the attack. And as it was going out live on our website, my family were calling the Foreign Office and saying, help, there are British citizens under attack. And the Foreign Office simply said, we advise against travel to Gaza. And that was all that they said.
That's incredible, isn't it?
It's nice to know, isn't it?
The didn't manage to visit us.
That's
when he did get in, he said, oh, I've been standing outside since yesterday, but the Israelis wouldn't let me in. And I thought, the Israelis wouldn't let you? Where is the authority of the British in this? The Israelis are not allowing the British citizens and their consul their legal rights, and we're just accepting it. And when we were finally being deported against our will to Istanbul, again, for those of us who didn't ask to go there, completely illegal to send us to a third country without even our wallets. They took everything from us. I said to the British consul, I'm not going. And he said, well, they're sending you. That's it. And I said, it's illegal. Stop them. He said, oh, well, Israel does what Israel does. We can't stop them. They're going to send
and that
you.
Is,
that's really what he said, honestly.
And that is what he actually said. Israel does what it does.
It's incredible, isn't it? You know, he just sort of threw his hands up in the air. He was very, very nice, personally, and he came to check that we were alive and weren't being abused, but he had no authority whatsoever to stand up to what Israel was doing.
What's your future plans now? Where do we go from here, basically? What's the next plan of action?
For me, personally, I'm only here in Britain until we raise enough money to get more boats. If they deported me 2 days sooner, I'd have been on the Rachel Corrie.
You have an amazing spirit, I must say that.
We're going to go back in greater numbers. We can't be bound by bullies, and we certainly can't let the deaths of our Turkish colleagues be in vain. We have to go back. We have to go back in greater numbers. We have to keep working and keep sailing until we end the siege of Gaza.
Amen.
Well, I hope that let us know the details of the next planned trip, and also perhaps, you know, here at Unity FM, there may be many people listening who'd like to join you as well.
Absolutely.
Yes. If people want to join, you go to the website of Free Gaza Movement. It's simply freegaza.org. If people want to get involved, there are numerous ways they can. There's a passenger application form to fill out. And, of course, the most important thing for us at the moment is donations. It costs a considerable amount of money to launch this ship. But in terms of the impact that it's had, I think every penny has been well spent. It's been well worth it because this is... We've had such an incredibly positive response. I hope we make this count now.
If I can move on a little bit. Well, as you know, I've been through your own experience, and it's a harrowing experience, and I take my hat off to you for...
Well, actually, Silas, I was thinking that Dow has also been listening
I do want to... Yes, brilliant, Steph Alex. Thank you. I'd like to invite you to come on my programme. I do a regular... two programs in Sheffield, Bowen Green Community Radio, so I'll get your details from the brothers there.
That would be great. I'd love to talk to you.
And what you've just said, I was quoting from biblical text. What you've just described is was happening 2,000-3,000 years ago, the same problem. I just want to read you the final verses from Isaiah 22, and it said, and the word came of the Lord came to me, saying, Son of man, say to her, you are a land that is not cleansed or rained on in the day of indignation. The conspiracy of her prophets in her midst is like a roaring lion tearing the prey. They have devoured people. They have taken treasure and precious things. They have made many widows in their midst. Her priests have violated my laws and profaned my holy things. They have not distinguished between holy and unholy, nor have they made known the difference between the clean and the unclean. And they have hidden their eyes from my Sabbath, so that I am profaned amongst them. Her princes in her midst are like wolves tearing the prey to shed blood to destroy people and to get dishonest gain. Her prophets plastered them with untempered mortar, seeing false visions and divining lies for them, saying, thus saith the Lord, when the Lord has not spoken. And it goes on. So I saw, and the final piece is... on that day, the remnant of Israel, the survivors of Jacob, shall cease to lean on him that proved to be their destroyers, but shall loyally lean on the Lord, the Holy One of Israel. And a remnant shall turn again, a remnant of Jacob. Your people, Israel, may be many as the sand, but on a remnant shall turn against them, and the instrument of final destruction, justice in full flood, said the Lord, and the final, I will bring the final destruction upon the earth. Israel will be the cause of this, the final thing. But what Alex has just said is just repeating that Israel has been notorious and lies and has committed murder and continues to do until somebody stands up and says no.
Now, Alex, as I was going to say, despite your harrowing experience, you're alluding, and I really do admire you, and all of us here, and our listeners actually, have the utmost respect for you guys who've been on the flotilla. Now, on Sunday, the Rachel Corrie was taken. What can you tell us about that? What details do you have at the moment of the Irish boat?
Well, I'd like to applaud my colleagues who followed us in the Rachel Corrie, because when they sailed, they knew exactly what level of violence that they might be facing. And I'd like to say that there will be hundreds of us more following again, standing up to the bully that is Israel, because we won't let them deter us with their threats. And the Rachel Corrie was, as you know now, was also taken by Israel, and I think that that shows that Israel is really quite determined to escalate things at the moment. The level of brutality has increased even from last year, and the level of their determination to stop anybody going through to Gaza has increased. One thing I want to note about the Rachel Corrie, the Israelis have said that they will examine any aid and possibly transfer some. Of course, everything that is on the Rachel Corrie is on Israel, is not on Israel's permitted list. It's banned, and this, you know, things like cement and pen, paper and medical supplies, which I saw myself being loaded in Dundalk in Ireland. I very much doubt that Israel will allow anything off the boat through, but the authorities in Gaza have said if they are offered aid from the boat, they will decline it, because this isn't about aid. They don't want to be reliant on aid. There is no natural disaster in Gaza. There is no need for them to be reliant on aid. Their suffering is entirely a result of the Israeli siege and the Israeli occupation.
If I may quote you from
Gaza should have a thriving economy. Gaza should have an open port. So if anything is sent onto Gaza by the Israelis from this boat, the Gazans are going to have made the brave and strong decision to refuse it.
Now, there was a quote from an Israeli military official that the whole point of the Rachel Corrie going to the Gaza Strip, it was a publicity stunt. What do you make of that?
Sorry, the sailing of the Rachel Corrie was a publicity stunt?
The whole the defying the blockade of Gaza by the Rachel Corrie was actually, it wasn't to deliver aid to Gaza, but, and I quote, he said it was actually for a publicity stunt.
Well, if you consider breaking the siege of Gaza and attempting to allow the Palestinians to have some dignity and have an open port and an open trade link, if you consider that a publicity stunt, then it's a publicity stunt. But I wouldn't say so. I mean, there was aid aboard the ship, and the aid is such a tiny quantity compared with what's needed that it was more of a symbolic gift to
what
to
kind
our
of
host.
Aid? What kind? What sort? What kind of things?
What
were
was
there?
Aboard the Rachel Corrie?
Yes,
we had. I think it was 40,000 tons of cement, plus many tons of medical equipment, including medicines, wheelchairs, Zimmer frame, IV drip stand. We then had sports equipment. We had equipment donated by football clubs. We had toys, and we had educational supplies such as pens and paper. Really dangerous items like footballs
and was that
paper.
Donated by everyday people?
Yes. We fundraised, the Free Gaza Movement fundraised for the money to buy the cement. Everything else on board was donated mostly by general public in Ireland and some came from Britain.
Which is quite significant considering the state of recession that the Irish are going through right now as well.
Yeah.
Many of them have actually lost their homes, and it's really probably one of the worst cases of deficit in the whole Eurozone.
Yeah, and then
get
people
steal.
Are, you know, genuinely touched by what's happened in Gaza and want to do what they can. And that comes from, the support we have comes from a broad section of society.
Well, we're genuinely touched here, myself, Saeed, I'm sure David is here as well. We're all genuinely touched ourselves.
Absolutely brilliant
stuff. Yeah, and it is important to remember that the news story isn't really about what happened to the passengers and what happened to the ships. It is still all focus should still all be on Gaza, and that's why we're doing this, is to bring the focus to Gaza, because what we went through isn't 1% of what Gazans go through
every day.
And the main difference is, they may beat us and harass us and kill our colleagues and steal our boats, but we all have governments that should be able to take action on our behalf. Our governments are capable of taking action against Israel, and they have chosen not to. And I implore all your listeners to stand up, scream, shout, lobby, and do everything they can to require this government to take action against Israel, and not statements, not just words. We need to stand up. Our government needs to stand against this illegitimate authority that Israel has taken in the region. The blockade, the siege of Gaza only exists because Israel says so. We don't have to respect it. Our government, if they chose to, could stop diplomatic relations with Israel until they start treating the Palestinians fairly. They could cut diplomatic relations with Israel, open direct talks with the authorities in Gaza, and open a direct trade link, and let Gaza port operate like any other port in the Mediterranean, and
absolutely.
Give Gaza the economy that it should have. That is possible. There is no natural physical impediment to any of this.
Absolutely.
So we,
right,
as
yes.
British citizens, should be standing up. We could all be standing up and shouting at our government to do that.
Yeah, I mean, you're amazingly selfless people. I've got to say that, and you're right. I guess it's not really a case of waiting for the governments, but obviously the fact that people like yourselves and all those people who do, you know, just take action, you know, people like, everyday people like yourself, like ourselves, get out there and do something. That's what counts.
We had to physically force them to take notice of us, because all the lobbying we did for years, all the writing in to the,
they were
to
just
the
ignoring
people that
it.
We elect and that we pay for,
yes,
wasn't getting us anywhere. And we know that the vast majority of the public's on our side, and yet the government does nothing. The only way to bring this to the focus of our government and the other governments of the world was to do something on this scale. And
absolutely.
I hope that the massive sentiment and support that we have at the moment translates into real action. And again, I just implore your listeners and anybody who feels moved by this to get active and to force our government to take action. They work for us. The government work for us. We pay them. We elect them. We pay them.
Absolutely.
We should make them do what we need them to do.
Alex Harrison, it's been a pleasure, an absolute pleasure talking to you. And
I hope it won't be the last time.
And I hope it's not the last time. I hope we will talk again.
Thank you very much.
And
thank you. Honestly,
we thank you because
this late hour, you know.
What's more, Brother Tariq, is that we're sitting here behind a microphone in the studio with people, brave people like Alex, going out there facing the violence and the murder they face to the hands of Israelis, doing the job they're doing and they're determined to do. You know, I have nothing but respect, absolute respect, and I take my hat off to them.
Hear, hear, hear.
Absolutely, yes, indeed, hear, hear, yes.
Alex Harrison,
thank you very much.
Thank you. Good night.
Good night.
Well, we didn't really get a chance to talk too much on the whole G20 thing, as we're very close to break, so perhaps that'll be something that will be back and cover in the following week.
I think it's
impending. It's very, very close now. Some of the topics I think we will be covering in the following week by Tuesday, when we announce our competition winner as well, by the way.
Absolutely, yes.
The impending budgets, of course, the beat G20, the furthering of austerity measures by the corporate institutions to the Eurozone as well.
And hopefully, Brother Dawood will be able to join us for a short time next week, if that's possible.
Inshallah.
And because we have got some more subjects I want to touch on, and especially this legislation passed by the European Union, where countries could actually be sanctioned if the European Union doesn't agree with their budgeting plan, or if the government resists to make cuts that the European Union recommends.
Yeah. Well, you were warned.
Absolutely.
And yes.
Well, you have been listening to another edition of You Classified. From next week, folks, You Classified is changing the time. Let me just give you that lineup one more time. From next week, from 7 p.m. to 8 p.m. is Dr. Abdulmajid Khatami. That's 7 p.m. to 8 p.m. Dr. Abdulmajid Khatami. From 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. that will be You Classified. From 10 p.m. to 11 p.m., it will be the Alternative Radio. That's the lineup for Tuesday evening. on Unity FM from the 15th of June 2010. So I hope you'll all tune in. Thank you very much for all your calls today and your texts. And I hope you'll continue to text, email and call next week. And my special thanks to Brother Dawood. And hopefully next week we will be able to get Gerald Kaufman and Alexander Barron. You have been listening to UCLAS 5093.5 Unity FM with myself, Syed Ahmed, and Tariq Ziad. Join us next week, 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuhu, and good evening to all our listeners. And hey, if you got little ones, give them a kiss, give them a hug, tell them you love them, because they just don't know what's around the corner.